Hello again.
Hello, Jan.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
How many months since our last one?
It's I don't know, but it's been a while. I guess the funny thing is, in the last two episodes, I think more so in the second one rather than the first one, I was referencing something to do with it being summer or something to do with I think it was when we were talking about I was talking about swimming and all that, going, oh, it's actually not too bad at the moment. And it was aired then recently, and it was quite cold. So, I'm probably the same colour as I was now as I was then, seeing as I've just not recently back from Dubai, so I'm back into summer mode again. But yeah, it's been a while. We've both been doing various different things. Lots of things have happened. There's been lots of changes. But the podcast rolls on more frequently now. I guess both of us are really looking forward to that. We've got some exciting news coming up on that we're not going to reveal at the moment until it's up and running. But as people can see, we've got our new urban kind of look. The white background and bookshelf is gone, and we will have a new look coming very soon. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Right, what are we talking about today?
So today we are going to chat about business.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, may not be applicable to everyone.
Yeah,
but certainly I think there's a fair share of people in both of our circles that own businesses, are interested in starting businesses.
Sure.
And today we're going to talk about your business,
mm-hmm,
and my involvement in your business.
Okay, so we're going to wind the clock back to the dreaded C word and lockdown and all that shit. And when everything changed, really, I guess. And I guess Body Image Health and Fitness was closed for a total of 11 and a half months, which is a monumental amount of time for any SMB to be closed. And the landscape of how it looked once it reopened was very, very different. People were slow to come back to the gym for a number of different reasons. And I knew that I couldn't sustain the way things were going the systems that I had in place, or lack thereof, more to the point. And we had a conversation and I decided that you were the missing piece of the jigsaw for me, because all the systems and the structure that you could bring to the business based on other businesses you'd been involved in before was something that was attractive to me at the time. And I went, oh, that's really an area that I'm so shit on, and I think John would be great at that. So that's realistically where, I wouldn't say our business relationship was formed, because we've done a lot of filming in other things prior to that, but definitely within the gym scenario, that's when your involvement came. And I guess what I want to do here is, this was your idea, right? You know, and changing the color of the gyms and all that, and having it looking the way it did. So you tell me, when I want to hear it from you, when you saw what you saw and the vision you then had for it to change into what it now looks like, how did that look like in your head versus what you saw when you came in?
I think even before getting into that question,
mm-hmm,
I'd like to just go back to the initial point at which the idea of you bringing me in was conceived, because I'm actually unsure of this. I remember being in the car with you. We were heading up to actually do a bit of filming.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know prior to that you wanted to get me involved? Or I remember talking about it and you were telling me about some of the issues, mm-hmm, with the gyms.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just kind of clicked moment.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much pre-planned that you wanted to get me in. We were just talking naturally, because we already had a decent friendship at the time. We'd been working together for probably 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did a lot of filming together. And
I can actually remember, I can, believe it or not, my memory isn't great most of the times, but I can recall that conversation completely. And I was in the car and I said to you, if I could have you next to me every day, if that was possible, I'd do that, because there's so many times during the day where I go, fuck, I wish I got that on camera or whatever. And it's just like, when you were with me and we were going filming things, it were, you know, obviously we were going there with a purpose and stuff like that. And I was like, fuck, if only there was a camera, or only John was with me, you know, that kind of thing. And I'd said that, and that kind of sowed the seed for you as well, didn't it, really? Like,
it did. Even as you were talking about it, you were bringing up the issues sometimes, and we do this a lot in private conversation. Mm. You talk about some issue you have, and I might have an idea for it, and I might talk about some problem in my life, and you might have a solution to it. I think mainly because we're such opposing personality types, and we do things in different ways, and we see things in very, not opposing ways, but in very different ways, certainly.
For sure.
And to be honest, the moment you had touched on all of the issues and you were kind of aware that it couldn't continue, certainly even before you mentioned me getting involved, I was eager to fix it, because if I see something with potential anywhere, and it doesn't matter what it is, but especially businesses, and my mind goes to so many different ideas, so many different approaches, and I just want to get started on it and try out new things and try to fix it and try to implement systems, which is very much me. You know me and systems. And wanting to fix things. So yeah, I think definitely by the end of that car journey, and we spoke more about it on the way back, I think by the end of the journey I had already said, yes, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Just as a new pet project, because actually it came at a very interesting time for me, because I had just left another business where I had done a lot of operations, systems, implementation.
See, to get to this right, I guess the easiest way for me to articulate what I feel you brought to my business, and consequently any business you or any third party would go into, when someone starts a small business and it starts to grow, obviously there's a whole bunch of emotion attached to it, and it's your baby, it's your thing, and it's all of that. And when all of that is there, one doesn't look at it in actual functionality and pragmatic form, where you came in and you looked at it and you removed all emotion from it and went, okay, that's not working, that's ridiculous, that should be there should be this and this, which would equate to this and this. And it's as I always say, like, you know, the 2 + 2 thing will always be 4. And when you go in, but when emotion gets attached to it and someone is romanticizing over, oh no, but like this and that and yeah and all that, that's rubbish, you know. And that's the demise of a lot of businesses, is people hanging on to their own ideas and not having the humility to put their hand up and go, look, you know, I tried this thing, it's kind of working, it's actually on the decline, or it needs to change, because there's no, like, yes, I'm here at the minute, but like we both know, especially with the way the landscape was after reopening, it wasn't going to work. It couldn't work because I don't have the footfall in West Cork of you know, new members, and it was very, very difficult. Costings of everything had gone up. So you came in and you came in with a non-emotional view to it and a pragmatic view to it, and it worked really well.
Yeah. So to go back to your original question there, I guess where I started.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the most important thing was to signal change.
Mm.
And again, I think this ties perfectly, whether it's business or personal. If you want a big change, you need some way to signal that change up front. Mm-hmm. So rebranding. Change of logo, change of colors, very simple things. Perhaps more important in a gym, more so than any online business or whatever. But to signal to the people working there, to the clients coming in, even to ourselves. As simple as the gyms were black, they were very dark, they were warehousey.
Mm-hmm.
Going to white, going to a new slogan, Embrace Change, something that I remember we spoke about before it was even the thing. And it came out of a conversation of certain people not embracing change. And the difference in mindset between being open to change, especially like as we think about if you're running a business or you're doing the same routine or whatever for 2, 3, 4 years, you can stay in the known or you can go along and perhaps take advantage of positive change in the future if you do embrace it. So body image, health and fitness, embrace change, developed out of that. And signaling the change of branding, the change of ethos around the brand, I think is one of the fundamental points of getting everyone on board. Your team, your clients, it sets an outward message that we're changing. Something big is happening. And that's just as important to signal to the clients as it is to your own team, getting your own team. Because it's one thing going, me coming into the business and saying, okay, we're going to change this, we're going to change this, we're going to change this. And just have a nice to-do list and some minor things change, new systems, whatever. But to have something in the macro that you walk into the building and wow, everything's in a new position. Everything's a new color. Everything's looking clean and brighter and more modern. Whether you're going into that as a workplace in the morning or coming in as a client, it gives you the sense of something new.
The big thing for the big thing that I always wanted to do, and I even before I started Body Image Health and Fitness, and I was when I was back in the rugby club all those years ago, I started going, I'd love a 24-hour gym, because I just like the idea of not having to look at your watch to see what time's it, going, oh fuck, the gym's going to be closed in an hour and I won't get a workout in. And it's just like, ugh, you know, because that happened, that was me. Or you, like the gym back then was, in the rugby club, was closed on a Sunday and it was a half day on a Saturday. And, you know, people want to bored on a Sunday, you know, you want something to do or whatever. And then there was time. So the time for me was always something that I wanted massive hours on when we were before pre 24 hour. So we'd big hours. But I'd always wanted the 24 hour route. And I remember saying to you, and I said, look, you know, this 24 hour thing would be great. Like, and obviously, you know, the biggest thing with 24 hour is insurance. And that was difficult to get, to say the least.
And I mean, when we first floated the idea, we wrote it off.
Yeah.
It was one of the... We obviously had a few conversations at the start about things that we'd like to see different, things that we'd like to see changed. And 24-hour was on that list. But it only came about maybe 3 or 4 months later. Of course, if you're a gym, you need to be insured. And most insurances like there to be a person present in the premises.
But it always did annoy me, right? It always did annoy me that in the UK, like 24-hour gyms are just everywhere. But it also annoyed me to think that I knew multiple other gyms that had either cards or fobs or, you know, some entry system into them. But they weren't 24 hours and they didn't have anyone there. And I was like, but they definitely have insurance. Like, what are they doing for insurance? So that was always at the back of my mind as well. But we did write it off. And we did, you know, we did try the older kind of model for the first 3 months of having staff and so on and so forth. Until I think it was just eventually... just being persistent and finding an insurance company that I remember talking to my previous insurer, and they said, no way, there's nobody in the country doing it. Can't be done. And I said, there must be someone doing it. Because it just kept annoying me that I could name out a couple of different facilities that you could go into and there was no staff there. And one day somebody answered the phone in a broker's in Dublin. And I said, listen, the usual thing. Because at this point, the opening conversation for me for the insurance companies, but it had got pretty, short because I was expecting to be told no. I remember this guy. You picked up the dealings with him afterwards, but I remember this guy. Yeah, I'm pretty certain. I got a quote for a gym before, but it was expensive, and I was like, I don't care how expensive it is, as long as it can be got. And he came back to us, and he said it can be got. And then you got involved then, and he was an elusive character to deal with, to say the least. But anyway, the insurance was sorted, and then the idea was born. Then it became a thing, didn't it?
Well, at that point, it was a necessity, because before we got that, I think you touched base with a few different insurers because you were so curious about it. I had written the idea off.
Mm-hmm.
Due to, I had also called in multiple insurances and, as you say, just being declined everywhere. But I had sat down and done the finances. I'd taken over the finances of the business as well, and added everything together. And I had come to the conclusion that the gym was not viable.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't. So there came a point where I sat down and did projections for a 24-hour staffless facility. And given the impact that COVID had financially with footfall, at the time of year it was going on the turn of the new year.
Mm-hmm.
It was unviable to continue as you were without going 24-hour.
Yeah, well, look, let's make no bones about this. Like, if we couldn't have gone 24 hours... I'd have had to close the doors in both places, sell the equipment and, you know, go off and do something else. Because, as you say, that was the idea of you coming in. It was just you were able to look at it and go in practical terms and go, figures just aren't there. And they weren't, you know, and I guess I was, and they were there pre-COVID, you know. It, like, you're never going to be a millionaire from a couple of gyms, that's for sure. But it's definitely when you remove any percentage of the footfall that we had, it crippled it completely. Absolutely crippled it. And I think the fear mongering that was put in to gyms around lockdown, and you know, that they were one of the dirtiest places you could be. I mean, it was the most stupid, barbaric message to put out there when they should have been putting out the message to, you know, fitness is the thing you need to be at your fittest to be able to be in a position to fight whatever fucking virus was out there. But instead they were condemning the place, and that genuinely frightened people. And, coupled with people just getting fucking lazy, like, you know, and just falling out of routine. And, you know, as we alluded to in the last episode, you know, falling out of love with fitness itself and going, Christ, how do I get back there? And that's, you know, going outdoors and all that. So, yeah, it was going under. So from, call it serendipity, call it whatever, that's when the door opened for the insurance. And I said, right, you know, let's go.
I mean, another thing we differ on greatly is how we run businesses. I think I have an approach of, again, implementing systems, and I have a massive thing of making everything as efficient as possible. If I see a business, my number one goal isn't to increase the profit. It's to reduce the amount of work and input that needs to go into it. Both from other people, from employees, obviously, margin-wise, as well as management. And I think you've had a few businesses, I've seen a few of your businesses. You're a people person.
Mm-hmm.
You love being involved. You love talking to people. Mm-hmm. You want to be there. You want to be the face of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very much the opposite. I want to step back, automate the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
make it a nice, streamlined, efficient system,
mm-hmm.
and let people work away.
Yeah, so just I guess in the simplest of terms, like, I'm a people person, you're not. But yeah, and I mean, like, that's the great symbiosis of both of the relationship is like this. It's just so different. We're so different in that regard, and in my airy fairiness and going, oh yeah, whatever, and you going, no, there needs to be a system in place. And then I kind of bring the kind of just relax a bit to your life and all of that. And that's why it just works really well. Since going 24-hour, it's great, you know? And I always say this to people, and I've seen it, how many places did we see or how many things did we see post-lockdown where inflation came in and every price of everything went up? And I can remember saying, we can't put the price up, because it wasn't, like, in my opinion, why would you put the price up? Like, the value wasn't there to put the price up. And as well, the money isn't there for people to be spending on it as well. So it's, and we don't know what the future holds. So was it go out and look for more business, or was it, okay, go in there and have a look at what's it costing to run? How can we get that down? And obviously, you know, by going staffless 24 hours, that is obviously, you know, cut the bottom line down. And we're now able to navigate in really, really poor times and really rough waters economically, which is fantastic. So it was definitely a great decision and a great thing to happen at that time, for sure.
Now, I'm curious, actually, about this.
Mm.
You, just going back to the talk we had, the initial one, where I got involved.
Yeah.
I made it very clear, and this is still a very important thing
for me. I know what you're going to say here.
That if I get involved, I need autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
That the only way I get involved is if I get to make the decisions,
mm-hmm.
without even involving you.
Mm-hmm.
That I have your full trust, your full support, to do with the place as I like. Now, that, I can only assume, even though we had known each other for a few years, was still quite daunting for you.
Mm.
How did that feel?
So, I knew the value that you could bring. And I knew that change was going to cause upset. There's no doubt. That, like, changing anything, not everybody is going to be happy with it. And there was going to be, you know, whatever was going to come was going to come. And, you know, that was that. But it had to be done. It was either that. If I didn't give you that and I didn't bring you on board and I didn't let... If I was going to take you on, it had to be 100% you having what you needed at your disposal to do what you needed to do, or else not at all. Because you can't be half pregnant. It's all or nothing. And there was going to be collateral damage for sure, you know, for a change. But that's the case in everything. So as difficult as it was for me to go, okay, fuck. You know, again, me being a people person, trying to keep everybody happy, and you being like, you know, John, right? I knew that had to happen, and yeah, as scary as that was, I knew it had to be done, because what was the alternative? It was either okay, like, yeah, it's going to be collateral damage, or there's either going to be colossal damage because the door's going to be closed and no one's going to have a gym in either place. And there's going to be massive upheaval in my life and big financial implications for me having to close and all of that. So it was, I had to give you carte blanche, really, because it wasn't going to work otherwise. Like, it'd be like somebody taking a car to a garage and saying, like, you know, I'll help you with the job because I want to involve myself in some way. No, you just, like, if you're asking someone to do something, it's just, okay, well, you know, go for it. It was difficult, but it was a necessity, and I fully believe that cutting the apron strings for me was a great life lesson going forward, no matter what I get involved in now, that I can't fix everything and I can't keep everybody happy, and that the only way that you'll grow in business or in life is by understanding that your weaknesses, looking to where you can find those strengths, whether it be in someone or something, and dropping your ego. That was the thing for me. It was difficult, you know, because I felt like I was failing, you know, that, like, because I'm twice your age and I was there, you know, this guy's coming in and he knows how to run this way better than I did. And, you know, so there's all of these things go through your head. But once one learns how to deal with that, it becomes a strength then to let go.
And even in that, we nearly went from one extreme to the other within the business.
Mm.
Before me, it was you. It was, let's say, warmer, you could certainly say. You were there. You were the face of it. You were greeting everyone. I remember the first day I met you, I remember walking in and meeting you for the first time in there and, you know, being warmly greeted and shown around. Where do you think is the line in a business, especially a business with clients and members, between automation and warmth?
Honestly, right, I think the perfect balance of that is actually, I think the perfect balance of that is right now of what it's like in Lisseverde. Because, so Steve, amidst all of this, as Steve has been with me since day one, Steve went self-employed within the gym. So all the clients that were Body Image Health and Fitness clients before, had gone over to Steve, as you know, because, like, Steve had worked with these people. We'd done Operation Transformation for a couple of years and Steve was working with these clients, so they were fully invested into Steve. You know, they made contact with me originally through whatever I posted, and then their personal training experience and anything gym related was all done via Steve. So essentially they were invested in Steve, not me. And you know, but I had a decent relationship with these people as well, because, you know, I'd see them and all of that. And I was probably checking them in online and doing food when we were doing Operation Transformation. But still, Steve built a very decent client base out of that. So we had a conversation and he had decided to go self-employed within the gym, and all of the clients were then automatically his. And he rents the space from Body Image Health and Fitness to be there. But the thing is, and the wonderful thing about Steve and his persona, I guess, like, I'm a people person, but Steve was an extra people person. And he still treats the gym like he works here, you know? So even though he's only essentially responsible for his clients, like, he will still, if there's a new member that asks for help or something like that, he'll still show them something or whatever, because that's just the kind of guy he is, and he likes helping, and, you know, and that's that. So the fact that Steve is within the gym quite a lot of time, obviously Monday to Friday, not at the weekends, there's that beautiful trade-off of having an atmosphere within the gym. And I think that is lovely then as well, because you've got the automation of the 24-hour thing, which means that not everybody wants to be spoken to when they come into the gym. You know, this is the thing as well that I needed to remember as well. Some people don't want to be spoken to, and they're coming in there because they're really either in the zone and they really want to train hard, or more often than not, they're going into the gym for escapism for themselves. And the last thing they want is me coming over talking shit to them. And I think that and this is only something that's kind of the last number, I'd say the last 4 years, 4 to 5 years for sure, is headphones. Like, no one wore headphones when I started in the gym years ago. But now, you wouldn't even need the music on in the gym anymore, because, like, everyone has their headphones in and they could, you know, not everyone's listening to music. They're either listening to an audiobook, or they could be listening to motivational stuff, or they could be listening to music or whatever. But everybody's in their own headspace themselves. And the last thing they want is, you know what it's like if you're listening to audio and somebody comes over and talks, you're just like, fuck off, you know? I think in the Lissabard facility, for sure, that anyone that would like to be spoken to and Monday to Friday when Steve is there, they get that kind of personal experience. But if when they come in and they just put their headphones on, they get left alone as well. And that's one of the things that I think is a lovely trade-off. But that's because it's Steve.
It's difficult to achieve on a...
It's difficult to achieve on...
wider scale.
On a wider scale, because when it comes to that perfect balance, you have to have that hospitality style of interacting with people, and Steve has that down to a T, because you know he spent, you know, the guts of 15-16 years working in the Celtic Grass, which is a hotel, so he's in the hotel gym there for that length of time. So he's dealing with hotel guests, he's also dealing with members and all the rest of it. But he was extremely professional, polite, and all of that, and that's his persona anyway. So it's difficult. It's rare to find that in personal trainers. So you either get somebody who's really, really knowledgeable that like is just, you know, knowledgeable and all in of personal training, but having the kind of that hospitality end of things is rare. And I'll tell you the reason why it's rare. I had a guy on work placement for college, for whatever it is, CIT or whatever it's called. And when I was speaking to the course coordinator afterwards, and they were asking, you know, how did that person get on? And I said, great, and all the rest of it. And I said, do you have a module on how to communicate with people? And they said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, exactly what I'm saying. I said, is there a module of how you greet people, how you can hold a conversation with people, how do you make someone feel comfortable? Because if you're a personal trainer, you need to make someone feel comfortable before you can ask them to bend over in front of you and do this, this, and this. Because it's a very vulnerable thing, and it really, really is. And people are coming in, they're embarrassed coming in, they're coming because they're not happy with themselves, they're coming to an individual who physically looks fit, and they constantly feel like they're being judged, even though they're not. But that's the default kind of, you know, thought process. So the last thing they want is to be dealing with somebody with a massive ego. But that's hugely prevalent within the fitness industry. So that's why with Steve, like, he's just so warm and welcoming. And the hospitality side of things, I definitely think, should be integrated more widely into how to become a personal trainer. It's massively overlooked.
Another point of interest in our dynamicism,
mm-hmm,
in the management of the business is certainly the area of conflicts between us.
Mm-hmm.
The things we defer on. And
has this got anything to do with carpet tiles by any chance?
Besides disagreements of colour,
yeah.
I think there was certainly a little bit of pushback from you, not so much verbally, but I could tell that you were certainly unhappy with some of the ideas that I wanted to implement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, given that you had given me authority to do certain things, there were some things I was overruled on, of course. Ultimately, you're the owner.
But to be fair to you, you did say, you did verbalize that if you had an idea, and you were like, you always said to me this, I'm strongly in favor of this, but ultimately it's you make the decisions, is what you would say to me. And that was nice, though, to know that for me, that you weren't totally dictating, but that you were, look, I really believe in this, but ultimately, like, if you tell me no, I won't do it. And that was nice. And I didn't push back on too many things. Go on, sorry.
It's to that point. It's a give and take as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I disagree with something, but I'd let you have that. But when a concept I think Jocko speaks of greatly, again, someone we listen to, pick the pick your battles. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's not of vast importance to you, let the other person have the win. And you certainly allowed me some wins. I allowed you some wins. And oftentimes we agreed with each other after it was said and done.
Yeah.
In terms of what the other person wanted. But an analogy I made to you, and when we went 24 hours, it was certainly a turning point for the gym, especially in terms of the plans that I had made for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I initially came in, I wanted it to be a premium space. Obviously, there's gyms everywhere. No matter where you go, there's competition. And how I saw the future of the gym was as a premium offering with consultation spaces, top-of-the-line personal training experiences. And I made the analogy of, look, we were Emirates first class, or at least that was the vision. And essentially, we're turning the business into Ryanair.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're obviously, given the way that everything is going, we should have increased our prices by all means, mm-hmm. from a pragmatic view. Our membership fees should have gone up, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that was due to the change of the business, the change of the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. And even that was something that was quite difficult for me to accept also, because I'd gotten on board to the project wanting to turn it into a premium space. You know, I wanted to turn it into the be-all and end-all of gyms in the south of Ireland.
Yeah, because look, let's to give context on that, it isn't just to have the vision that we spoke about was not just to have two really, really good gyms. It was like, okay, we'll get these right and then we'll just roll them out all over. It was like we were going to go to every town in West Cork and then have it in such a way that we could roll it out across the country. Once we had, you know, once we had a handful of them all running right, and we knew our mapping and all of that, and we knew our market, then why wouldn't we? I had the connections for the equipment, that we could scale it, and it would have had the footfall been like it was before, it would have been definitely been easier to do. Thank Christ we didn't go down that route, because it would have tanked massively.
Yeah.
But like, if you think about it, John, so your analogy was about Emirates and Ryanair, and it's a bitter pill to swallow. If you're planning to go and work with Emirates, right? So we've both flown, we've both flown planes multiple times, and we both love flying. And if we were both commercial pilots and we were told, you guys are going to be flying with Emirates and this is the vision and these are the routes you're going to take, and by the way, we're going adding more routes and you guys are going to be involved in it. And then it's just like, oh, that's not really going to work out. And then Michael O'Leary goes, do you want to do the London, the Cork Stansted route for me? Like, it's just like, right, okay. We're still flying, but it's not the same.
Exactly.
And that was kind of that was the analogy of it. It is in like, okay, well, it's not gonna have the niceness and the element of almost like boutique style element that we were kind of going to bring to it too. And it was just it's just a gym that's open all of the time. You can come in, train, and go away, and no one's going to say anything to you. And that was kind of, I guess that was not a bitter pill to swallow, but like you were coming into it wanting to make change, because you embrace change, remember? but then you had to eat your own words. Then, like, you actually had to embrace the change for, you know, going the opposite direction. But I still stand by it. You know, we wouldn't have done only for it.
And that's it as well. From an end consumer point of view, I made the analogy of Ryanair is shit, but it's still the most flown airline.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's the most convenient, and it's the cheapest for what you get. And ultimately, it was a question of, are we willing to sacrifice that to run a viable business?
Yeah, no, but I don't think we had a choice, you know. ultimately, because it just boils down to, when you look at all these bricks and mortar businesses in rural Ireland, you know, every small town in the country has them. You drive through the town now, and how many shops are closed or boarded up due to, you know, online and, you know, e-commerce and stuff, or you know, big chain and stuff like that, and, you know, the city and malls and, not, you know, like Mahon Point shopping centre, you get everything that you want in there. So the small business loses out big time. But it's definitely down to it's down to footfall.
It's adapt or die.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Especially in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, and I remember once the 24-hour thing was working, and you were saying, you know, you were doing all the analytics on it, and we were going through the figures and all of that, and we were looking at it, and, you know, seeing actually what was going out versus what was going in, and then I was there going, in my own head, like, could we do this? I was having this conversation in my head, like, going, could we still do this and keep it going and do it in every town, like I said, in West Cork, and then on a broader scale? You could, but, like, the ROI is just terrible, because the outlay of what I don't think people understand how much it costs to put a gym in a place. And somebody goes, oh, that equipment, that machine isn't brand new. Like, it's $100,000 to set up a gym with secondhand equipment. That, you know, and if you're to start, like, with the gyms that are 4,000 square feet, and you have a little bit of everything for everyone, it's you go somewhere and you buy new where you have to, and you get secondhand where you can. And I mean, like, just even when we were doing the refit, just the carpet tiles alone were nearly 5,000 just for carpet tiles. And I just feel like it's crazy. The buckets of paint, because everything that you're buying at the time, everything we were buying was like buying it in twos, you know, because we were doing both places. Buckets of paint alone was $1,100 just for a bucket. I mean, we were doing it ourselves. New computers, new systems, new everything was double the cost, because obviously coming in twos, and it just swallowed so much money. And this is what people don't see. And people think, oh yeah, you're not, there's no staff there, no, and like you're still charging the same price. Like, this is serious. You're trying to recoup 11 months of being closed. And do you know what the funny thing was, right? That all the small providers that I will say, all my creditors, right? The smaller they were, the more they worked with you. Like the phone company, like four phones, and they wouldn't do anything. No, tough shit, you've still paid a bill. But like, I'm ordered to close by the government. I can't, you know, tough shit. I remember ringing up and saying, can I pause my contracts on the phones? Oh yeah, you can pause them, but you'll still be charged. You know, I mean, that's the most stupidest thing I ever heard. And like, when it comes to, you know, both my landlords looked after me, and I thanked them, you know, deeply for what they did. But some people's landlords didn't look after them. And it's a very, very difficult thing. But I guess people really forget the amount of cost that was involved in changing, the amount of cost that was involved to make it 24 hours, and how much money was lost as a consequence of being closed. I mean, it's a very, like, I'm not joking, like, that period of time of my life definitely added 10 years onto me. It felt like it did anyway. If I ever could nail down a period of time where I felt I aged the most, looking and everything, but even internally, like, it was the worry and the stress that that those 2 years did to me, you know. Not good.
Sometimes it makes more sense to cap it. Just cap your success, cap your revenue, and say, this is it. We're not expanding. We've streamlined it to the max. It's making this much per month now. Take your time and invest it somewhere else.
Mm.
Keep it as an income stream. But focus on something else, grow something new. And I know that's certainly something you've done. You were, how many hours per week were you spending on the gyms before my involvement?
Yeah, it was all day, every day between the two places, and just like soaking up. The thing that happens as well is like when what I was doing, and I was allowing it to happen, you know, I was soaking up so much conversation from so many people. And like you said, people are coming to the gym because of some reason. Obviously, they want to get fit or whatever. But the ones that wanted to talk were talking about, you know, heavy stuff. So you're soaking up all this energy from other people, and it's fucking taking it. It was difficult, like, you know. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I don't regret any of it, because it was, you know, it was fantastic. People shared some amazing stuff, and you know, likewise back with me, I made some great friends and have some great friends from the gyms, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But I remember, again, a conversation that you and I had, and you articulating that to me about the time invested and growing and all of this, and it made sense kind of almost immediately, because my mind was more geared up to your way of thinking, because I'd seen what you'd done, and I was, you know, I'd been more bought into what came out of your mouth than I was at the start, because obviously it was vastly different to what I was thinking. And having that then is, and you saying, look, you know, it is what it is type of thing. And yeah, we could spend a bunch of money on advertising this and this, but like realistically, what's it going to bring? And I think they both facilities run the way they run, and everything's cool, and we do the best we can to manage them the way they are, and that's that. And it was like, okay, well, where is the best way to invest that time now? And things had moved on for me, and things had moved on for you quite a lot as well, because you had found other areas of your business had started to develop as well, and I started to get kind of itchy feet looking for something else to do as well. Yeah, ultimately then that kind of led to kind of where we are now. So
I'm curious as to what your advice to other people in a similar situation to you in November 21 would be, where you have a business, you're very hands-on, you're scraping by. Obviously, it's likely a very different situation than what the gyms were. Every business is unique, no doubt, with its own challenges. But comparing yourself to the day we had that conversation,
mm-hmm.
to yourself now, in terms of the changes that have taken place as a result of stepping back from your business, putting fresh life into it, and perhaps allowing it to change into what it needed to be rather than what you wanted it to be. What would your advice be to people in similar situations?
So for me, it was about scale, right? And it was like, you know, we've scaled it to where it is, and what does that look like? And is this something I want to do for the rest of my life? And if I did continue like this for the rest of my life, then what does that look like? And I guess the biggest thing that I would say to anyone is, what's your future goal? I mean, if your future goal is, I'm really, really happy with staying within this industry, whatever that may be, I'm really, really happy with my business, whatever that may be. And, you know, maybe I just want more time for me to do personal stuff that isn't work, and you're happy enough with your financial situation and all of that, is you really need to map out what the future looks like for you, and how does where your business is right, your business right now, how does that look to be able to support your long-term goals. And it's letting go. It's cutting the apron strings, like I said, and just going, okay, if the future, and I want certain things from the future that we've spoken about before, but I also know that I don't want to be doing exactly the same thing as I'm doing or was doing with the two gyms for the next 10 years. I just, you know, that's just not where I've lived, as we've, you know, from episode one, you know, I've lived multiple lives and I enjoy going through multiple stages in life, doing different things. And I always knew that, there's going to be more. And what does that look like? So I guess identifying this, that the future is going to be, you know, you've got to be open for change. And I get very bogged. I hate things that are final, and I know, you know, that's it now. You're going to stay there forever, or you're going to stay in the one job for the next 40 years and get a mortgage and fucking die. But, you know, ugh, this is not me, right? So I would suggest anyone to let go of the apron strings, and what does your future look like, and how does that best serve for either a transitional phase out of either the business you're in? Can you sell it? Can you automate it? Or can you run it alongside maybe a new thing that gives you more passion? At the end of the day, it's about passion. You know, because there's only so long you can do something in exchange for money until you get pissed off at it. And we both know that. But if you're passionate about something and you go, do you know what? I really like what I'm doing. And if I could do it for free, I would. If you can find whatever that is, then, you know, that's the thing that's going to make you tick. But ultimately, you're going to have to be able to just disconnect at some point from where you are. And just, again, it all ties in. I know it's cheesy, like, but it all ties into change. And it's embracing that. So I guess future planning, and does where you are right now best serve you to get to that goal? And if it doesn't, and it isn't as you did when you came in and looked at figures, if it is mathematically impossible for one to achieve the type of lifestyle that they want to based on their current situation, then something has to change. Like, so that's the advice I would give someone.
Ultimately, this whole conversation and all of our collaboration has been due to an entrepreneurial spirit, mm-hmm, within both of us. I think a hunger in both of us that always seeks new ventures, and an unwillingness to settle, which is, I think, a very good topic for the next podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And look, it's, you know, I know, look, this episode, or, you know, any of this, it may be boring to some people and go like, well, I don't want to just know all about your ins and outs, but it's applicable to where I'm going with this. And look, if, you know, if people don't want to listen to it, they don't have to listen to it. But it's about unraveling a story that's ongoing, so people have context. Because to be fair, you know, there's a lot of people who have listened to, especially the first podcast, and gone, I never knew that. I never knew that about you. So it's important, I think, that there's context out there that people go, oh, right, okay, now I understand, or now I know why you've just come back from Dubai. So I think, John, it's only fair to keep the story going. And, you know, to be fair, you've got your own little story to tell. And I definitely think there's great value to be got out of your vision of what you want for the future as well. So I'd like, in the next one, if you don't mind, I'd like if you kind of tell me a little bit about how you reached the point of where your life is just about to transition to as well. Because that's I think, for I definitely think that's a massive thing for you, and the way your life is just about to change, and the impact it's going to have on both of us, because, you know, it's changing for me too. So that'll be episode 4. So until then,
thank you very much for watching, everyone, or listening.
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll leave it at that, and we'll catch you on the next one.